Look at this. I got headphones on. I got a mic going. Baby.
If
Huh?
only people could see you now.
Hey, no video. We've gone through this before. No video.
Welcome to This Commerce Life. This is a podcast aimed at small, medium entrepreneurs focused on commerce. I'm Phil, your host, and Kenny, your co-host, will join us as well. And we're going to talk to you about the world of retail and commerce and how things are changing in the world.
Does Andrew have a last name, or does he just go by Yellowfoot?
Andrew Kinnear.
Everywhere I saw it, I was looking for Yellowfoot. Andrew Yellowfoot.
Andrew Yellowfoot.
I don't have a last
name.
No. I was apparently
you just legally changed my
Yellowfruit.
Name.
It's Yellowfoot. Andrew Yellowfoot.
Andrew Yellowfoot. That's hilarious. It's
how's it
nice
going,
to
guys?
Meet you, Andrew.
Hey, man.
Yeah, how are
good.
You?
Nice to meet you too.
Yeah, excellent. You as well. What's
excellent.
Going on?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just chilling in my basement. How about you guys?
Pretty much
chilling
the same.
In my office upstairs.
Yeah. I'm same
all
deal.
My shit.
Same
but,
deal.
You know,
yeah.
It's all good.
Yeah.
Excellent.
It's nice to meet you.
It's nice to meet you too.
Yeah. We it's kind of funny. We've been doing this 4 years, but I think most of our guests either our friends of friends or someone that we have met in our tenured journey in retail of some sort. And you're cool. One of the rare ones. Like I think I saw you on LinkedIn. I saw some of the cool stuff you're doing and reached out. And
great.
It took us a little bit of time to get, but I think that was mostly me just not getting.
Wow. I didn't even know you, we didn't, I didn't know. You didn't. I knew. I didn't know Andrew Yellowfruit.
Yeah.
I didn't know you two didn't.
No,
know.
I didn't. I saw some of because Andrew uh-huh. Andrew posts yeah. A chunk of stuff on LinkedIn, mm-hmm. And I don't remember why, but I think it was a little while ago, and he and I started talking, and then like I was in, I was out, and then I finally came back and realized like, damn. I asked Andrew to be on, and then I didn't send him any dates or anything. Like, poor guy is probably like
a bit of a loser, oh, man.
Like, I was losing sleep over it. So I was just thinking, when am I going to do this podcast?
Exactly.
Oh, damn it! Like, I said yes. When am I coming on?
It dangled that fruit in front of him. And the poor guy's thinking, like, what the hell did I do? Did I say something wrong? See, I'm usually we can tell we're very well prepared. So I didn't even know. I thought you guys knew each other. Or maybe Philip probably told me I wasn't listening or something.
Yeah.
Some
I tell him all sorts
like
of things.
Twitter,
but he never
you know, yeah. Some people are on Snapchat. I'm more of a LinkedIn guy.
I like LinkedIn too. That's
we're
like
LinkedIn guys for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I like LinkedIn.
Yeah.
I'm not a big Twitter's a little noisy for me. It's too much shit going on. Snapchat, I don't understand it anyway. TikTok,
me
I don't
either.
Know what the hell to do with it.
Snap, I'm getting.
Instagram, I used to like.
So
but
this
now
commerce
it's like
life is on Snap. No, not Snap. We're on TikTok.
No, TikTok.
We're on
I don't know what
TikTok.
The hell we're doing on TikTok. Who goes to TikTok
buddy,
of our age?
Do you
Nobody.
Know? So I've figured out a handful of things now. So every time I post, it's got to be live and authentic on TikTok is what I'll tell you. So if I post here in the office, no matter how excited I look, I get no views.
Nobody cares.
But if I do from the car, I get an average of 1,200 views.
Seriously.
Looking? So I posted yesterday because we had an episode.
It's not me and Andrew, I tell you that much. We don't have TikTok.
So our episodes come out every Monday night. So every Tuesday we do socials. And so I posted Tuesday afternoon. So by last night we were at 981 views.
What do we have to do with TikTok?
Listen. They like
I'm just
me.
Asking.
All right. They like
maybe,
me.
Oh, so it's you just, is what we're. Okay,
mind, you're helping their business, right? Because it's organic right up until it's not. And then you have to pay to get impressions.
Yeah.
You know, I think we saw that with
what?
Everything.
Like
we saw it with Facebook, saw it with Instagram.
What are you talking about?
Everybody, really, everybody wants it.
Yeah,
everybody
yeah,
wants
yeah,
blood
yeah.
out of you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, it's interesting.
Anyway.
It's kind of fun. So we'll see where it goes, you know?
Cool.
So we've got Andrew Kinnear on today, co-founder of Yellowfruit.
Andrew Yellowfruit.
Or otherwise known as Andrew Yellowfruit. The Yellowfruit. We don't actually know you at all. So we'd love to hear a little bit about you.
Sure.
The we're we're largely unprepared, largely unscripted.
Me too.
I guess the way we kind of do this is
the three of us will get along.
Yeah, we'd love to hear about you, and then
sure.
how you got to where you are now, and then tell us about Yellow Fruit and the whole bit.
Yeah,
sure. Geez, where do I start?
wherever you like, man.
Well, I mean, I'm like a born and raised Ontarian. I grew up mostly around the Collingwood, Ontario kind of neighborhood up there, and then went to Guelph to university. And, I did a few things in university. I sort of started in computers and ended up more in like marketing and then economics. And I actually met my wife at university, well, at a bar that we both worked at during university, but not actually in university. She and I weren't in any of the same classes or anything like that. But she's my co-founder. That's why I bring her up so early.
Oh, okay.
Awesome.
So Claire and I met way back then, and then, you know, didn't talk to each other for like, I don't know, 10 years or something, and then reconnected when we both lived in Toronto. The personal life part of the story, like, you know, got married, had kids, et cetera, et cetera. The professional part of it was, kind of interesting. So we were living together. We have these two kids. She doesn't eat dairy. And, we started kind of on this product development journey, and that's how Yellow Fruit came to be. But I'll tell you more about me first. So in that span of time, when I was kind of, you know, having real jobs and things like that, I worked for a number of different companies, mostly in a marketing or sales kind of capacity. I worked for a display company selling big, you know, wooden boxes that hold paint chips, you know, very exciting stuff. But I learned, you know, the business of, display marketing, retail, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I eventually got more into technology. So things like loyalty programs and points programs and that kind of stuff.
Cool.
And developed some expertise there. And was really hot on social media marketing very early on. So it's funny, we joked about Twitter. I put a couple of big Canadian brands on Twitter. And that was sort of my entrance into sort of some modern marketing with some big brands. I worked for Air Miles. I worked for Sobeys, a couple of agencies here and there. So I was kind of always doing, marketing and technology together. I worked for a bank doing, you know, digital marketing. And then I ended up, spending a few years at OLG. In the lottery business unit specifically. And I was there for a while and kind of had a, I would say that shaped a lot of my marketing experience. I got to lead I was very lucky. I got to lead a team that was doing everything from what you see at retail, what you see in stores. So OLG operates 10,000 points of sale. Just in Ontario. So everything from like the posters on the big blue plastic thing to what shows up on that video screen attached to the terminal. That was all my team. And then also the non-paid marketing stuff like, social media, mobile app development, website, email, CRM, all that kind of stuff. So this was a very cool job. With all these kind of different responsibilities. It was very cool. I learned a lot.
What was your team?
I was about 15 people. So a couple of the folks reporting to me had their own team. So like the retail side of things, there were a few people that rolled up to that group. And then I had to kind of create a few roles too, because this is a few years back. And you know, OLG wasn't doing anything with social media when it came to the lottery. So I had to kind of make a business case for a person. And then we hired this great person right out of like Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment. She knew what she was doing. And she kind of brought us into the modern world of social media marketing. And then the same thing for mobile apps. We were kind of in the Stone Age a little bit when it came to mobile. You know, we were barely making mobile optimized websites. And, you know, I'm kind of making this business case for things like ticket checkers, you know, and just really basic stuff that you would expect a lottery would have. You know, I bought a ticket, let me pick up my phone and scan it to find out if I'm a winner, like really basic stuff. And that was like 2 years in the making. You know, I had to make a business case to get a person, make a business case to get a budget, give the budget to the person, have the person find an agency. The agency, you know, review takes 6 months. Like it was so, such an arduous process, but then eventually it all, you know, it all works out. Yeah. We do awesome stuff.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of fun. And after OLG, so there was some changes there. And then after OLG, I ended up doing a lot of what I liked, but for my own kind of consulting business. So I had some clients. The projects were obviously a lot smaller because I didn't have like a team of 15 right. to do stuff. It was more just me.
Consulting. And me.
Yeah. Doing and all me. The work, you know?
Yeah, yeah. We're familiar with this.
Forget that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the consulting also helped with things like, you know, selling myself, because, you know, any consultant will tell you, you spend most of your time getting your next client, right? So that was a lot of fun. I worked with some really fun brands and really tapped the network of the people who had supported me through my career. Mm-hmm. You know, I ended up working for a great guy that I've known for years who was at HBC and doing some work for them in payments and, you know, really cool stuff, payments and loyalty. Worked for a big food service company. So like just really random stuff, but it was mm-hmm. all kind of people who knew me or knew somebody who knew me. And
right.
it was all referrals. I don't know how any consultants get like cold business, like just out of the blue. If you don't have a network, I don't see yeah. how
you I don't see how you do it either. I mean, all my stuff is like yours and probably Phil has come from somebody.
Yeah.
I've never knocked on a door without knowing who's going to answer the door. I haven't.
Why? I have. I've had a little bit of it. I mean, you like, really? You put up web pages and like, if you do, I mean, nowadays, like,
I think people check you out before they get to you though. Don't you
yeah,
think?
Yeah. But like I do a lot of commenting on things like Retail Wire. So people, you know, like retailers read that stuff and brands do too. And then eventually you get, but it is rare though. Right.
Like, I think they're rare. Yeah.
They're rare too.
Yeah.
It's nice. So I think that's probably why consultants will do things like write an article for a trade pub or do a speaking event. I've gotten a couple of things out of speaking events where people like didn't know me, but then saw me speak and they're like, oh, we like kind of his
dude,
approach.
You're kind of smart. Yeah. Come.
Yeah. Which is always great for the ego. Yep. Right? We heard you speak and now we want you.
Of course. Yeah, why wouldn't you? I've heard you speak too.
Yeah. It's amazing. So, amazing. I mean, I did. So I've done a lot of things, mostly marketing. And so then we end up, you know, back into this yellow fruit world where Claire and I basically said we could take this product and we could turn it into a company, turn it into a business. But we're on our own, right? It's like, we don't have VCs giving us millions of dollars. We bootstrapped the whole thing. And we just said, like, we got to learn everything from manufacturing to like the science of product development to, you know, go back to basics on marketing and sales. Like, we had to kind of figure it all out.
Yeah. So do you want to, sorry, Kenny, do you want to tell us about like what, cause I like, we brought you on and Yellow Fruit, but I don't think, I think I know what Yellow Fruit is, but do you want to just kind of cover what it is? And
I'm with Phil because I did it. Well, it's funny because I never researched. So I asked Phil tonight, I said, like, who is this guy? Right. He sends me this Yellow Fruit. So it took me a while to find Yellow Fruit. So I was with a W, nothing comes up except Yellow Fruit. And I looked so I've been listening to you talk. I'm thinking, okay, but this is a refrigerated frozen product, CPG product. And I'm waiting for something in this lineage of your workflow that's dealt with CPG. And I'm thinking, I'm waiting.
Sobeys in his background.
I know, but that's
I heard that. I was listening.
I heard it too, Sobeys. But it was like, he breezed over it. We get lottery and we're doing and I think, okay, I'm still and I haven't heard CPG. Sobeys,
but the OLG Sobeys, terminals are not far away from the ice cream.
Sure. Yeah.
It's, you know, bunkers technology. Right at the front of the counter.
Almost same, Phil. You know, almost same. A freezer and a terminal.
An LCD screen, a lottery, you know.
Like, yeah. I mean, we used to think of lottery products as basically a packaged good, right? Especially things that had a physicality, like an instant ticket, like a scratch ticket.
I guess to some degree. I mean,
it was a frozen. There were a lot of you know, comparables, but definitely it wasn't like a frozen. I wasn't dealing with buyers at all. There was a
supply chain. It's a whole different world. Yeah, I mean, that's why I was waiting. I thought, okay, he's going to come to it. It's coming. Yeah. Oh, no, not coming. No,
we had to learn it from scratch. Yeah, it was. I mean, even at Sobeys, like I knew a few people at Sobeys, but I was, you know, helping their executives understand why they needed to be on Facebook. I wasn't talking about food or selling groceries, right? It was nothing.
Preserving the cold chain, you know.
But what was cool is my office was right across the hall from the guy who launched like all the products for Compliments and Sensations at Sobeys. Okay. And so this guy was like a chemist. His name is John Hale, very talented chemist, a product developer. He had worked for Tesco and came to Canada and did a bunch of product development for Sobeys, and then he's an independent now. But he was a guy that I met when I was at Sobeys. So like 10 years later, I ring up John Hale. Hey, remember me? We had offices next to each other. I want to launch an ice cream made of bananas. Can you help me figure it out? And he said, well, in fact, I'm a product developer for hire. So we hit it off and started working on products.
That's amazing. So
it was pretty cool.
That is
so
amazing.
Tell us how you got the banana thing.
Like, sure. So let me tell you the audience, the listeners, what yellow fruit actually is. So yellow fruit is a non-dairy frozen banana dessert. So it's like ice cream, but made from banana puree instead of cream or milk. It's an organic product. It's made in a peanut-free facility and it's certified vegan. So this is fruit, but it's made from all the same kind of structural ingredients as ice cream. So it's got fat, it's got sugar, it's got protein, but only in the sense that like real ice cream has those things.
Right.
You need that to make good ice cream, even if it's plant-based. Mm-hmm. Fat, sugar, and protein, you know, there's science behind it.
It
holds the air together. Yeah. It makes tiny ice crystals. It depresses freezing points. So there's all this science that goes into making ice cream. So if you have these equivalent parts that are plant-based, you can make a plant-based ice cream that's still scoopable and tastes good and has all the things it needs. So back to my comment about John, we started down this product development path, coming up with a banana-based product, and realized pretty early, like, you know, these are the flavors that we want. We want to, you know, start off with and launch with. We tried a bunch, but we landed on three really good ones. And then, you know, we really refined what was going to go into it. Like when you're starting from scratch, you could have bold ideas. Like, we don't want to have sugar in it. Well, if you want to depress freezing point, you don't have sugar. You could use like sugar alcohols. You can use other things, right? But then your ingredient deck is going to say xylitol or something, and that's like scary. So we opted, like, okay, let's just put actual nice organic cane sugar. Yeah. And anyone who doesn't like sugar, fine, don't eat it. But I'd rather give my kids a little bit of sugar than xylitol.
Yeah, something
so
I can.
That
pronounce.
Was like the approach to product development. And so we went through that for all the ingredients, and we landed on three products, and we happen to name them after our kids too. So there's Monty's favorite strawberry, Eddie's favorite chocolate, and Holly's favorite mango. And those are my three kids.
Very cool.
Okay. Yeah. That's so awesome.
What's the reason for the banana? Like
why
didn't you pick any other fruit or another non-dairy something?
Like totally. Why? I mean, I don't think we were, this was not a novel concept. Like you go to any yard sale and you'll find a machine called a Yo Nanas, where you like jam in a frozen banana and out comes soft serve.
Never heard of it.
It's a thing.
Yo Nanas.
A Yo Nanas.
Yo Nanas, yeah. And then the other thing is, really? Most parents have mushed up banana for their babies.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You start with banana, like, right? Banana peas, like it's a few basic. A banana is always one of one. It's good, sweet, and
exactly. Banana works.
We've made frozen banana ice cream here at the house, but But we don't have the same persistence, right? Like usually after about 3 weeks, you find one neglected frozen banana left in the freezer because we all lost interest. So
And the thing is, if you eat it right away, it tastes delicious. But if you were to just make some at home and then put it in a container in the freezer, it'll freeze solid and you can't eat it the next day.
Yeah,
okay. So we faced those kinds of like, I wonder if there's a way. And we were already loving the banana and the flavors we were getting with like banana strawberry and banana peanut butter and banana chocolate, banana, all these different banana things. We ended up not doing peanut butter. That was just an example, but like we ended up landing on a product line that we thought, okay, if you look at the natural foods freezer in Loblaws, there is oat, soy, almond, cashew, coconut like crazy,
right?
You know, maybe even some weird like water chemical, you know, we're gonna call it frozen dessert, right? But there wasn't a banana. And then it turns out there was a banana, and it wasn't doing well. It's off the market now, and we're sort of the only banana out there right now. But it wasn't novel. There was other banana frozen desserts. So we landed on banana because we liked it and we saw that market opportunity, like niche within a niche, and thought, you know, if we can nail this, you know, we'll have fans who don't want coconut and are allergic to cashew and right. So that's kind of why we focused, and that's how banana it wasn't like we set out to do something different. We just set out and was like, well, we're doing this and it's working, so let's keep going.
I love it.
Interesting.
I love it. It's funny, right? Because we get a lot of folks on this program that are the opposite. They take something they love and they double down on it.
Right.
And they just keep going and they go and they go. And then like usually it's Kenny and I going, listen, just because you love it, like if you love it and you can't make money at it, but that's a passion, right? Yes. Like it's just a passion.
And nothing.
So if you want to make money at it, you got to love it a little less and be a little more ruthless about what works. But so it's nice to hear that you were a bit ruthless about it, right? Is that we love this. We love this concoction, but we actually got to go out and figure out what the market actually
will bear.
That's
kind of why I'm kind of impressed on this one, because it's not sort of, I'm trying to keep finding sort of the connections of why, like the you know, oh, my kids grew up on bananas. You know, we used to freeze them all the time. We used to mush them up, blah, 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 blah. And you're thinking, okay, I get the banana, right? I also get the banana. Most people do like bananas. It's still
the most popular fruit in the world.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Most people bench, you know, how expensive a grocer is off the bananas. It's been since the beginning of time. Bananas are 69 cents, 89 cents. Like it's so stupid things in retail that just hold true. But and I like Phil, I'm thinking, okay, but he doesn't got the banana story built into this world. Thinking that's pretty freaking cool that you said, hey, here's an opportunity.
Yeah.
Bananas.
We found a gap, right?
That's a gap.
Do you have like allergies in that? Because you've chosen a very specific path too with like the peanut.
You said dairy, your wife's not good for dairy, right? She's lactose.
Yeah, Claire's allergic to dairy, which started us on the let's eat less ice cream kind of route.
But we still want ice cream, but it's not ice cream.
Absolutely. Like who doesn't like ice cream? So we were still eating it and we were just trying to look for other alternatives. I have a tree nut allergy, so we weren't buying the cashew ones.
No, you can't do any of those.
Almonds are okay. You know, peanuts fine for me. I'm not allergic to peanuts. But, you know, so there were all these sort of individual things that were pointing us towards, okay, we'll go plant-based. It's got to be delicious. Let's avoid tree nuts. You know, and that's sort of what guided us towards from a product point of view. I mean, we knew from the start we weren't going to make it in our kitchen and sell it at the farmer's market. Like this was very much a, how do we scale a business right from the start? Right.
Everyone... Now, was that you thinking that way? Or is that when you met up with the Sobeys guy? Like, was that.
No, that was Claire and I.
We're not doing the shit in the house. We're going.
Correct.
We're going.
Yeah. Okay. And part of any good product developer consultant, part of their job is to like help you commercialize. It's to come up with a product that you could bring to a co-packer and actually scale, right? Because otherwise, like they're going to help you refine your cookies that you can sell at the farmer's market. Like, you're not going to spend money on, you're not going to pay that guy to help you perfect your cookies if you're not going to scale. So,
you, so I'm telling you right now, just so you know, this is opposite of what most people do. Most people go to the farmer's market and think, geez, I got to make more cookies, and they don't know how to do it. So don't kid yourself. That is the way it happens.
You know what? I think I think I listened to enough episodes of
That's fantastic.
How they built this or whatever that the Guy Raz, you know, that podcast.
Yeah.
How he built it. And so you hear the guy from like Cliff Bar or something talk about how he had to, you know, do this in his basement and whatever. Most There's do, so many right? examples, right?
That's and funny though.
I saw it as how do you not just jump right to the, like, if you know you're going to do it, why not go to scale and then your unit economics are good, like pretty much right away.
Yeah.
And we're a big fan of unit economics, I think is.
Which is a different
concept. That's how we drive our business.
Yeah. Well, most people, again, that's not what they, it's typically the passion, the idea, it forms into a business. And a lot of times the reason they don't work because it should never have been a business anyway. It was just a cool idea. Right.
Yeah.
We've met people that make stuff and then bought the foil equipment to place in their, kitchen. So they could,
you're thinking like, seriously,
and you're going, No, the whole point, if you're going foil, what are we doing here?
Like, and nobody explained to you the complexity of the refrigeration, frozen aisles, and how interesting it is with those buyers. I mean, buyers are, we've both been buyers for retail chains.
Yeah.
We know what we're like on any given Sunday.
Yeah.
Refrigerated and the frozen guys, that's a whole different league of interesting.
Oh, they're a whole level of cranky. Like, they're a whole different level of cranky.
I don't think anyone ever said to me, oh, you shouldn't do frozen because it's really hard. But a lot of people said, you know, look at the frozen category. When something is in a freezer, it's tough to move around. Like, you can't get an extra inch.
No, what it is, it's what out, it is. That's it, man.
Versus like the shelf, you know, they can move things around and slide things around.
You can add shoes, you know, there's always a way to do it. But once you're in a freezer, man, that is literally finite space, man.
Yeah. Which is why I love a planogram. But I sort of looked at it the other way and said, well, if I can get in the planogram, that also means if I can stay there, I'll be there, right? I'll be that banana skew. You know, maybe I'm down in the corner, but I can hold that.
But I got my spot.
I've got my spot. So I saw it like a double-edged sword. It might be hard, but if I can hold it, it'll be hard for the other guy too. Is sort of how I.
Again, you're thinking way past what most people.
Yeah, 100%.
Sort of do, right?
To. You guys, this is great for my ego, by the way. This is
no, I love this. No, take credit for it because honestly, it is very difficult. It's a difficult part of the retail store, period. It really is. It's not easy to get into. And most people don't think it the way you're thinking it, you know, that they don't get that is a bitch to get in because you can't move the walls of the freezer. The doors are the doors. It's a tight space and there's money in it for the retailer.
Oh yeah.
They can get good money out of frozen guys.
Yeah.
So now you're playing a listing game. It's a whole different world in there, different world. And then you also got time. Can't be in a freezer for a year.
I know.
Like, your product's got to move, eh?
Everything's
got to go. It's got to move. You know, the nice thing about, you know, I've always liked frozen inventory from that point of view, right? When someone said, you know, it's really hard, frozen, whatever, you got to keep it frozen. I sort of say, well, yeah, but once it's frozen, my shelf life is going to beat a lot of other products and a lot of other cat, unless it's something shelf stable.
Right.
You know, you keep me frozen and I'm good for 547 days
or
whatever, right? So, you know, if you look on the bright side of almost every negative, there's a
as
way
long
to,
as you're willing to find it. But we always tell everybody is don't look at the world with, you know, with rainbows up your butt kind of thing. Find that there's negatives everywhere. Find them, figure out what they are so you know how to go around them or through them or over them or whatever you need to do. But most people don't anticipate them. So when they hit, they get blindsided and you're thinking, buddy, it was like right there, man.
Good. Here's the quote of the episode. Okay. When you're wearing rose colored glasses, you can't see the red flags.
Okay, thank you. See, that was sort of the expression I was looking at, but the trail wasn't going to come out of me. In Trail, we didn't have expressions like that, right? It's a little small town. We did the best we could. Like, we kept it simple.
Hang on, Trail? Did you say Trail? Is that where you're
raised.
From?
Born and raised.
Is Trail the one that's like halfway between nowhere and has that big factory that like spews out that looks like Mordor?
That's Trail, that baby.
Nice. I've driven through there. At least once.
Summer is a tattoo. Yeah, Trail Smoke Eaters.
Nice.
Yes, and it's a little halfway. It's halfway between Calgary and Vancouver. But in the middle of
nowhere. I meant it's in the middle of nowhere between two.
Trust me, we were in the middle of nowhere. two big cities on the other side, but in the middle of nowhere. But I loved it. Loved the Kootenays, love Trail, love all of them.
Yeah.
But we definitely didn't have those expressions we had to steal from the city. As you can tell, I've only been in the city for 40 years almost, so it still hasn't clicked in. Slow learner.
No problem.
That's awesome.
So, so how long, because you're like, I'm on the website. And you are, Kenny, I haven't started shopping yet, but
I'm waiting for Phil. Phil does you are, episode,
no,
episode.
I already noted. So I live in Mississauga. I'm born and raised in Ontario as well in the Toronto area. But I live in Mississauga now, and there's a Longo's like 10 minutes from here that has your product in it. So I'm probably not going to order it online, but I'll probably go there tomorrow and pick up some stuff, I think.
We're in a bunch of Longos. It's best for people to always check the website because that seems to change.
Yeah.
Real Canadian Superstore, Loblaws, Zayers, etc.
Yeah.
All the metros in Ontario too. So if you have a metro closer,
you are everywhere.
So who's
we're trying to be?
Who was the one you went to first?
So the first big retailer to say yes was actually Loblaws Market Division. Said yes, but they were not the slowest, but they launched well after we launched.
Yeah.
So I got a yes from them in like late 2018, early 2019. We launched the product into about 100 stores in April of 2019, but we didn't actually launch with Loblaws until Canada Day. Like, it took them that long to get us set up.
For them, well,
that's not that bad. That was five months, right? For them, that's not that bad.
Yeah, for them.
I was thinking it'd be like about a year. Okay, but it's not that bad.
No, it wasn't that bad. And then in fact, it ended up being because the distributor I was using was already set up with them for DSD, and they needed to like switch over to warehouse or something. It was some internal kerfuffle, right? It wasn't even anything major. But we ended up getting a yes from FreshCo in like, I don't know, March, middle of March. And they were like, I'm doing it right now and you'll get a PO. So we ended up launching with FreshCo in April.
That's really super fast.
Wow.
Maybe it wasn't March, maybe it was February.
Yeah.
But it was like we got the yes, and then we were doing our scale production run, essentially like our first production run. I sold these guys using samples. And then we did our first scale production run. Thank God it all worked. And then, you know, before we knew it, there were pallets, you know, on their way to various places. So we launched into about 100 stores in April. By May of 2019, we were in, you know, maybe another 50. And then we just sort of kept adding stores. And then Loblaws came on board in July with Market Division. Discount Division was like later in the fall.
Right.
But in the fall when we launched with Real Canadian Superstore and those guys.
Yeah.
In that same summer, we added a lot of more like high profile, I would call Toronto, you know, the Summer Hills, the Pusateris, those guys, Fiesta Farms, the really, really nice, like gourmet grocery type stores, which is, you know, it's like, they're not buying a ton of volume, but it's the nice logo to throw on the website kind of thing. They're really great.
Right, folks.
Those buyers were great. But, the customer is right. Like,
it's exactly the right customer.
Yeah.
So it was really great to
Ontario to only right now, or like you're across country, I'm assuming.
We're across the country, but only with Loblaws.
Just so my superstore down the street could have it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Should have it.
In fact, it probably does. You have to look in the natural foods freezer.
That's fine. Okay. As long as I know where I'm going, I will take a look. Okay.
Yeah. A lot of the real
they do that. I wish they would put everything together. It still drives me crazy. Grocers are so slow to do things. I don't know why they segregate the store so much like that. I think they were
early, right, to that movement. They created that section for those people, yeah. and then
now they're late sort of waited. They're late to get it going.
My God, we're just people in your stores. Let's go put it together so you can. How many people you pick up? Because I bet you most people don't even know there's another set.
It's my hardest. Next to the ice cream, it's my hardest challenge.
Go nuts.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna go
awareness and trial, getting people into the right category, the right part of the store.
It's
is
hard.
Really difficult.
It's very, very difficult.
It's difficult.
Yeah.
So are you using? So you found your own distributor, obviously before. Right after you found your co-pack, you found a co-packer that does it. So this is made in Ontario.
Yeah, it's made in Ontario. We found a great, I talked to a few dairies because it's all, those are the guys with the ice cream machines.
They know how to do it, I guess. And
they know how to do it. Sure. So I found a great dairy to co-pack for me. So everything is, and it ended up being peanut free. So that was like one more
bonus,
more badge I could stamp on that,
absolutely
on the package. And then I ended up, working with a great distributor, again, here in Ontario, who does a lot of ice cream for basically everybody except Nestle.
Fantastic.
Like they work with Unilever and
right.
a bunch of independents and a lot of brands that I feel good about, you know, sort of being in the portfolio with. So that was nice. Mm-hmm. They're really going in that direction, which is good.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And, you know, so that was the start. And since then I've added, a distributor in Quebec,
right?
Because this distributor subs to everybody else. They're mostly Ontario, but they subbed everybody else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I ended up finding another distributor that I liked that was more like natural foods based, and they really knew the market in Quebec. And I'm working with a great broker who also speaks French. I don't speak French, so it was I really needed help in that area to build that market.
Yeah, you won't get in.
Yeah.
Well, you won't. I mean, it's a different market.
Was difficult. It was difficult.
Yeah, you're not going to go in.
But then, you know, the rest of the country is still kind of that's our white space, right? We gotta other than we're in Calgary, we're in
Vancouver.
You know, we landed Fed Co-op pretty early on too. Like I would say the late 2019.
Okay,
and this all happened right before the pandemic, right?
Yeah,
pandemic hits, everything like screeches to a halt as far as like growth and everything. But right before the pandemic hit, we managed to get a listing with Fed Co-op, so we're sort of in the middle of Canada as well. I just realized I talk a lot with my hands.
I'm Italian. I talk to my hands
it's
all the time.
It's all good, man. So you're in great company. You're in great company.
Good. Don't worry about it. You can't do anything on this show that's going to do anything. We won't notice half of it because we probably do worse than you.
So I mean, we continue to grow, but our challenge is, I think, what I hear from other small food brands, which is, you know, my distribution is there, my manufacturing is figured out, now I just need consumers to try it and buy it, so I've been trying to do basically anything I can to get people's attention, to get them to try the product, you know. I've done lots of different kind of PR stuff. I found a guy with a banana car. I've done traditional couponing type, you know, trade spend stuff. I got to do it all. It's sort of like all the basics are, or all the fundamentals are fundamentals for a reason, right? So you got to kind of do everything.
Yeah.
So and then, I add my digital layer to this, which is like, you know, you still got to do the Instagram stuff.
Yeah. Well, they're table stakes really, right? You got to do
that. Yeah. It's all the basics. It's all table stakes. Yeah. For sure.
But Andrew, are you using like for your sales and all that stuff? Are you using brokers to help you across the country as well? Or is it just you, your sales, but the distributors do their thing, obviously, but are you calling on the key accounts and trying to set up? I mean, demos are going to come back. We know that. Shows, like there was just a plant show, if I'm not mistaken, in Vancouver.
Yeah.
I think last week.
Planted. They renamed the Veg Expo to
Thank you. I thought that's what they had done.
Yeah.
You know, we don't go to shows anymore, so I would have gone, but you don't think shows since the stupid pandemic.
Yeah. And you know what? I'm soured on trade shows. I think trade shows, I have a list. I know all the buyers already who can make a dent in Canada. There aren't that many. And especially in this category.
No, you need a consumer show.
The consumer shows. I need those like 50,000 people.
You need people to taste it, right?
That's the old school sampling. Because trade shows, to your point, and it's funny you learned it that quickly. Most will go 10 years and start thinking, why am I doing this? You're thinking, well, because now you're sort of stuck in that if you don't go, people think, oh, is he still alive? Is the business okay? Now you've got a reputation. Now you got other, you're not going for any other reasons, just outside of, people need to know I'm not bankrupt. I'm still in existence. right? It's so stupid, right? But a consumer show, you know, you don't even need a 50,000 person. If 5,000 people at a great show that are stoked, you're going to get 5,000 people, even 5,000 customers.
The funny thing about, you know, when you're an entrepreneur and it's your own time that you're putting in, I already have the tent, I have the product. I'll do a sampling event for like a couple hundred people. You know, if I have the time, why wouldn't not? I just pop my tent and get 100 people?
Yeah.
Who's going to sell better than you?
Right, yeah, exactly.
Seriously, right?
So scale sometimes, doing things that don't scale sometimes is like really cool. And I don't mind doing it as long as I have.
Yeah, as long as you have the time.
As long as you have the time. But especially
as long as I can make it work.
Your consumers. You know, you get people, hey, have you thought of this? Have you thought of that? Have you tried, maybe flavors will come out of it? I'm assuming you're going to want, you have to have a dog or a cat because you ran out of kids. Unless you and the wife are going to be the next flavors, or your mom and dad, or someone's going to be on the list.
You're exactly right. We named it. I have four other flavors in development that are basically figured out, and they're named after my nephew, my sister, my mom.
I think I had to start grabbing people. Someone's going to be on thing. Someone's going to be on these things.
Yeah.
That's funny.
That's fantastic.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
That's really cool. It's a very different.
Yeah.
You may not see it, but it is a very different way. It's not the normal way that a lot of the small businesses start. No. It really isn't.
No.
It's pretty cool. Like, I'm pretty impressed. I mean, considering, you come from the CPG world per se, that's wow.
But you've scaled really quickly, right? Like, you think because traditionally we hear a lot, you know, where they get to, you know, kind of low cost of entry retailers, right? And then they struggle to get in. But you landed Loblaws and Sobeys, like some, Metro, it's pretty.
Those are big accounts.
Yeah, these guys are big, and they're quite unwieldy, right? Like they really are. They like are. The
especially in the set you're in. Again, you probably picked the hardest. You pick one of the hardest places in the store to go to. Like, you know, anything in the refrigerator, anything that's plugged in, that's the shelfing, it's a bitch to get in.
When I hear that though, it's like, it's not like we picked the category. We picked the product and
I kick myself every day.
I wish I could sell a granola bar or something I can keep boxes of in my basement if I need to.
It should be a shitload easier.
But
you're in a good spot.
I don't know if that's true anymore because they're not probably anymore. About, I don't know, like somewhere in the pandemic, we went from.
Oh, sure. If it's easy, there's a million of them.
Oh. Right. There's like, there was 200 granola bars ridiculous. Maybe before the pandemic. There's probably about 1,000.
Oh, it's insane.
You know, like, and, it's kind of like.
Cookie dough. Have you guys seen all these cookie doughs?
Like, how long is that going to last? As soon as the pandemic's finally over, whenever we get out of this mess, a lot of that stuff's going to dissipate. It's going to go.
Yeah, you know?
I keep seeing it, though. And I'm like, who's buying cookie dough? Because I'm fat enough.
I don't know.
Oh my God. Gotta stop. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotta stop. But this is really fast. I'm so glad you came out because this is.
I love the story. I think it's really, really cool. Man, good on you, man. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And it's good that you seem to be doing well with it. It's you're still going. It's still growing. So when are the new SKUs going to come? Like, are you thinking innovation or extension?
Well, so we did a couple of things. So one, when we launched in 500 ml traditional like pints, right?
Mahogany small kind of thing.
Yeah, that's
it. And Ben and Jerry's, whatever.
Well, it turns out my co-packer also had this machine that would make these little cups.
Like
the old school, like
with a little, exactly. It's not really a spoon. It's like a.
It's a wooden stick.
The wooden stick.
Yeah. A little fat and little end on it. Yeah.
The cup is like a clear cup with a pedal bottom. It's 100 mLs.
Okay. Oh, nice size.
And it's a perfect size for a novelty. Yeah. So I got them to put, you know, the same product. You know, I had to make the lids and get the right barcode and all that. But then I ended up having all these samples that I can give out or sell at a
fair
or do all this stuff with. That I didn't have to use like 500 ml and crack that and just give out spoonfuls. I could give out little cups,
especially during the pandemic, tough to do,
which was very handy when the pandemic hit. It meant I had to give out a lot more volume of product instead of a spoonful. I was given a whole one, but it also made people really happy. Right. If you're at some event, like we did a thing with Metro all summer where they were doing these drive-ins in their parking lots.
Yeah.
And so I pitch a tent and I just give out ice cream, and there was there were other booths there trying to sell stuff whenever. And I'm just looking for awareness. So I'm like, here, try this. You can buy it in that store because it was in the Metro parking lot.
Yeah.
And it makes people happy, right? If you're a little kid and somebody hands you ice cream and then they say,
come on.
If you want to try the other flavor, come back in 10 minutes and I'll give you another one.
Like at school gatherings, we're happy to pay for the same piece of crap ice cream with the little chocolate swirl in it or the strawberry swirl in it with the flat paddle thing that we call a spoon. Like you buy tickets so that you can get that ice cream, right? And that ice cream is the same size like that. And it's not really good for you. It's just crap ice cream in a little, little container, because... right? So now you can, like, for you, this is something where, look, like, one, it's super healthy. So for schools, this should be a major attraction. It has no peanut.
Well, it's the nut-free, dairy-free. I mean, seriously.
Which is a major, major issue for all schools now, right? So,
absolutely.
Wow.
I mean, you've got moms now.
If you know a school that wants to buy a box.
Well, schools sort of need to be back into normal before that happens.
Yeah.
That's mess number 27.
I was so happy when Pizza Day started up again because that makes my life easier when I'm making lunches for these kids.
Yeah. One less meal. I hear
you. Just a couple pennies. Here, go buy a pizza. Yeah.
No, seriously, right? Anyway, like, as long as you got pizza, you just got to remember to buy the pizza tickets, right? And then you're good to go.
Yeah. Our school, we pay ahead, and then it's just every Tuesday there's pizza.
Yeah, they didn't change that until we left. Like, my kids are 14, 15, and the other one's 20 and out of the house now. But, you know, like, they didn't change that until after we left, as soon as the last kid left, right? And then it was like, hey, we're automated. I'm like, son of a... I used to buy those stupid tickets that I have to buy them and then give them back to you, right? Like,
that's a long time ago.
Dumb. Like, yeah, this is amazing. This is I'll ask my local school for sure, because I think you know, hopefully
once they get
I
back
mean,
in the swing of things, it's really cool, because
I think the back half of this year, this right, really like you know, everything's going, hopefully everything's going back to normal whatever that means, but
even kids getting the vaccine is going to change
the whole game.
So you think like school barbecues at the end of the year.
Yeah.
It'll be really timely,
right? We did that. We just moved up to near Orillia. But when we were living in Toronto for the last 15 years, you know, we would do that for the kids' school.
Oh my gosh.
Would kids bring would these
be super popular, like the ice cream dude.
Yeah.
You just needed one of those.
There was a neighboring school
then...
who we were we were friends with, like the parent council, a couple of people on the parents council, and they were like, you know, we're doing a fun day and we want to buy a bunch of your ice cream to give out. And I was like, great. How about I pop a tent too and really get the brand out there. That was a blast.
That's fantastic.
Good for you.
Wow. Yeah. Good for you.
That's really cool, man. That's very cool.
This is so cool. Thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah. If people want to find you, how do they find you?
The best way is yellowfruit.com. So, you know, as Kenny mentioned, yellow without the W, you know, you want to trademark a word, you got to invent it. So we created yellowfruit. Yellowfruit.com has, where you can find retailers. It has info about the products. And basically every email address you find on that website will go to me if somebody, in the business world wants to email me. But don't tell any consumers that.
Digital leash, right? Like, it doesn't matter who you email. It's coming here. I got it.
Yeah. They're all aliases. So that's probably the best way to find me. And LinkedIn, like we talked about before. Like, I'm that guy who, if you're a real person and not some scammer spammer, you know, let's hook up. I'm happy to connect with people who aren't just trying to sell me something. So
no, we connected tonight, you and I. So that was good.
I love it.
That's probably how I learned how to spell yellow, by the way.
Real people doing real things. That's
isn't that crazy?
We'll put all of your links in our podcast episode as well. But
amazing.
Thanks for coming on.
I'm glad you came on.
This is fantastic. I'm going to go buy some tomorrow. Seriously.
I'm going to go check our superstore down the street.
Yeah.
I'm going to go see what
it is. Excellent. Yeah. That sounds great, guys.
Give it a try.
I'll put you on my mailing list and send you coupons every week.
We love it.
That's okay.
I think I've already signed up, actually. Did they pop up? Because I think the website thing popped up. So no, I didn't order because I'm gonna go. I have two Longos near me, and the one the one has it and the one doesn't have it. So I'm going to go buy some and then go hassle the guy. The guy at my local Longo's, he's tired of seeing me. Right. I'm always like, nice. Dude,
there's, you're always asking
there's
him
stuff, right? There's stuff. You don't have this.
It's listed, like, man. You don't have to do anything. It's in the warehouse. Like,
I know. That's what listed. I keep
just order it. Yeah.
Just order it, man. You don't have to do anything.
That's so frustrating for me when I am working with a retailer and I'm not in the planogram, but I'm in the warehouse and I have to like go to every individual store or sell them or whatever. It's like, oh, that's so frustrating. It's, you got to do it.
So one of our other episodes, there's a guy named Bram who runs an app called Shelfgram. Yeah. So
I know
so
Bram.
Shelfgram's the, oh, okay, great. Okay. Yeah. He's an amazing guy.
Shelfgram's an awesome product. Yeah. They've got a lot of backup from Field Agent.
Yeah.
You know, that's
we've had them on.
Like a commercial. Tonight's podcast brought to you by ShelfGram.
Yeah.
Hey, we should do that. We got to go talk to them about that. And Field Agent, because we've had those guys on too.
Jeff.
Yeah.
Brand.
Jeff's been on.
Jeff Doucette from Field Agent.
Yeah. Those are good dudes.
Just so you guys know, there's a debit coming.
Yeah.
You got used to that word now too, haven't you? You heard debit.
Come on. It was so nice. Don't. Bug the guy with debits in the middle of the night. Like, that's terrible.
Well, you guys are late time. I keep forgetting. You guys are 11
o'clock. Yeah, you can't remind him about Loblaw's debits at like 11 o'clock at night.
Oh, my God. it's 8 o'clock here, so, you know, what the hell.
Andrew, thank you very much.
Andrew, I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Okay.
Good
job,
buddy. Good luck, and we'll talk to you. Yeah. Well, maybe we'll talk to you next year.
Listen, when you launch new flavors,
let us know.
Hit us up, and we'll bring you back on the show.
Yeah,
and you can talk about them. We'll give you whatever we can in terms of.
And then by then, your distribution may have changed and things like that. You have some other cool aspects of the story.
Yeah.
That sounds great, guys. I appreciate it. And let me know. You know, if I could ever help you guys with anything, let me know.
Oh, cool. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Awesome.
Thanks. Okay. Take care, Andrew.
Phil, you're staying on for a minute?
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, I'll just leave then.
You can head out. They're done.
Thanks.
Alrighty.
Thanks, buddy. Go to sleep.
Andrew.
That's pretty cool.
It's cool.
Yeah, not many businesses, small business so thought out prior to hitting the shelf. Right. I mean, seriously, I mean, that was not.
He's no nonsense, man. Pitter patter. Let's get at her. Like, exactly. He's, and you know, he's all over it. And
honestly, how many do we hear? I started in the kitchen. Then I went to the basement kitchen. And then we went to the neighbor's house. And then we went to, you know, and you're thinking, this guy, no.
Co-packer, we're going to do this.
Bing, 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 bing. Let's go.
I think it's the first time we've ever heard unit economics on this show.
Seriously. That's awesome.
No, like.
Definitively, emphatically, go back. Unequivocally. Inside joke, guys. Sorry.
Oh, Kenny.
I'm out of territory.
Oh, Kenny.
Oh, okay. Anyway.
Oh, man.
That's
we thank you for listening to this episode.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
Oh, man.
That was fun. No, that was good, buddy. All right, that was good.